I'm Jason Michael Perry, the man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. Here's something I've been sitting with. I write every issue of my newsletter myself, but I also use AI as an editor to tighten things up, check my transitions. The ideas are mine, the thinking is mine, but did I write it? I think yes, but I'm not sure everyone would agree, and I'm definitely not sure many schools have figured out the answer either. My guest today is Joseph Thiebaud, founder and CEO of Cursive Technology. He's been living inside this problem since before most of us even knew this was one. But before we talk to Joe, here's a note from our sponsors.
Got a baby on the way? It's time for Hoopty. I'm Roxy Aldrew, Baltimore-based inventor of Hoopty Hoops, NFC-enabled silicone rings that turn any baby bottle into a smart device. Just tap to sync your bottles with our free app. Hoopty tracks your bottles, calculates expiration, and sends reminders so you never waste a drop. Shop gethoopdee.com. That's GETHOOPDEE.com and use the code THOUGHTS20 for 20% off.
Invested in AI but not seeing results? You're not alone. Perry Labs helps organizations figure out what's working and what's next. Start with our AI assessment at perrylabs.io.
Before we begin, you can let me know your thoughts on our show or ask a tech question by leaving me a message in the WIPR app calling 410-735-1616 or find me at jasonandperry.com. With that out of our way, here's our conversation with Joseph Thiebaud. I'm joined by Joseph Thiebaud, the founder and CEO of Cursive Technology, a platform being used at universities around the world to bring transparency to the writing process. Before starting Cursive, Joseph has proven to be a serial entrepreneur, having exited two other startups. Joe, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
So you call what Cursive offers as academic integrity tools. And when I hear that, my brain goes straight to this idea of a plagiarism detector. This thing that catches you copying and pasting from Wikipedia or anywhere on the web, like the Washington Post. But in the age of AI, is that really what we're dealing with anymore? Is it really plagiarism, or is it a little bit more complicated? How would you describe this?
Well, I would say more complicated, right? Okay. And I think a lot of our teachers and faculty around the world are starting to struggle with that fact. So traditional plagiarism detection mostly is based on, like, I get a big database of static text, and then I can take your text and I compare it to it. So you can think of it as, like, it happens after the fact, not as part of the process for writing. So the difference that we have with after the fact detection, which would also include AI classifiers, right, things that that can help you to know whether a text is, do they have confidence that it was created by an LLM or was it created by a human? Those all happen once the text is static. It's a PDF, a Word doc, something that you can copy and paste. But for detection or to know what students actually are learning and what they know these days, we take a focus on the process. So we're, in a sense, kind of ride shotgun with the student during the learning process and help to document parts of their workflow. Where did things, what was pasted, where did it get pasted from, but also be able to observe the process of writing in terms of, how much time did they spend, how much editing did they do, other aspects of the writing process to bring complete transparency to that. So it's more complicated. It's not a plagiarism detection tool. I really think it's more of a more modern approach to taking into account the behavior, the process of writing.
So when you say the words academic integrity, it's the full learning pipeline. So plagiarism, and we'll get more into that, might be a piece of it, understanding like how the end product came out, but it's being able to measure and track and say, I can tell this person did, I'm going to say critical thinking, because that's a thing that we keep hearing, that a student did the critical thinking that was necessary to show that they learned something from this?
Exactly. So I would say the hot topic these days, I think, comes down to a different term than academic integrity that most people understand, right? Plagiarism detection, and more focused on valid assessment. So what are good ways that we can know that a student has learned, is showcasing their critical thinking, has developed over the time that we're trying to get them to, you know, learn some objective or outcome. But for when it comes to valid assessment, I think that there's like three important pieces. One is the what, right? Is like, what are we assessing and how are we going to measure that a student has learned? Often that's like the product, right? Or it can be a performance, it can be all sorts of things that we are either monitoring or collecting from the student as an artifact or as some type of demonstration. So, you know, plagiarism detection, AI detection, those are mostly evaluating kind of the what, unless we can like actually put physical eyes and see the student do some of these things. There's a second part, which would be the how. So what's the process that the student went through, right? Can we document parts of their workflow? Can we see their, did they reflect on their use of AI in ways that are helpful to demonstrate that they are showing critical thinking, that they're doing a close reading, they're not just taking output for granted? But the most important aspect of valid assessment also comes down to who. Right? Is it the actual right student? Because I can get my friend to step in for me or to answer a paper or to write a paper or to, you know, to do all manner of activity, which is really not helpful when it comes to assessing a student. If we don't know who is the person doing the learning, in a sense, we don't have a very strong foundation for answering the how or the what. Those are kind of meaningless to this. And as we're especially for higher stakes education, right, for grades that lead to credits or that ultimately might lead to degrees, knowing the student and having information about the student and their learning progress and knowing the who becomes kind of the ultimate thing that we're going to use for credentialing or for verifying.
Just hearing that, I can't help but wonder what pain point schools say or use when they look for you, because this makes sense to me, but I imagine that a lot of universities, a lot of K-12 private schools that are finding these issues and these concerns, do they know how to actually say what they need? Do they know how to put these words, you know, together in a way that makes sense?
I would say yes and no. I think that we often look at academic integrity as a potential kind of pitfall, that it's an arms race, right? It's like that. Yeah. We'll never be able to kind of keep pace with the ways that students can circumvent good practice or best practices from an academic integrity perspective. But I would say is like these days, I think there's a general acceptance that the old methods for verifying what a student knows just no longer work, because AI is such a powerful tool and almost ubiquitously available, right? Probably as you're looking at your computer screen, you might have five different buttons that you can click to like call forth super powerful AI to do writing, to do all sorts of generation for you. So how do we assess students these days? I think a lot of people are struggling with that. One very common way right now is the kind of getting back to that point about valid assessment is to look at the how. So we see a lot of focus on what I will call like process tracking tools, which help to bring more transparency to the writing process by recording it. Now, most people don't know this, but in tools like Google Docs, which is widely used in the US and abroad for student writing, that collects a minimum level of revision history that can be extracted and used to highlight some of the process. So I think that those are gaining some traction, interestingly, and we do that. That's actually a byproduct of kind of our core competencies, which is answering that who question. But it is becoming more and more frequent that teachers might require students to either use Google Docs or use tools similar to that in order to help them to mostly just close the door on like copy paste, right? Copy paste yes. Culture is not helpful. We don't know where it comes from. In a sense, it's like anything that's pasted into a document might as well be anonymous to us. And it really does not help to let us understand what students have learned.
And this is the difference between how school probably was in our timeline, that, you know, if you did have a document, you produce a printed document. If you did have a digital document that was a Word document, you gave that final result, but the revision history, the version history was not necessarily something that you're submitting. But with the Google Doc or with, you know, even now Word with Microsoft Office 365, that version history is there. and that version history can show, like, it's like showing your work. You can actually see to some extent that this was pieces that happened over time. This wasn't that they took something from Claude or ChatGPT and just put the end product in. Now, to go on that, I had Dawn Shirey. She was from Baltimore City Public Schools on, and we talked a lot about the way the Baltimore Public Schools were figuring out how to deal with this moment. And some of the things that she mentioned is exactly what you said, is that this is an arms race. This is a case where the technology is moving so fast that they decided that instead of having a policy, they wanted something that was a little bit more of a living document so that it could change, you know, and that means that technology like OpenClaw that's out here now, or new agentic tools, as they happen, because the goal here is that AI is going to become more like us, more human, and potentially harder to detect. And so, like, the way that we determine that kids are using it in the right way starts to become different, I imagine.
Yeah, well, one, I would say I commend Baltimore School District for taking a progressive approach towards this, and whether they're using tools like Cursive or other tools, I think it's important to mention and to give I think it's important to acknowledge that for Baltimore School, especially where they're mostly offering these courses face-to-face, there's a real great opportunity for the teachers to have close relationships to the students in the classroom. Now, all students worldwide don't have that circumstance, and a lot of teachers struggle with how to deliver valid assessment that happens in online formats, where they don't have opportunity to meet with the students, or they're not willing to give up their 1 or 2 or 3 hours per week with the students up to closely monitoring and proctoring the students to see the writing process. So where you can't, I think there is a lot of opportunity to leverage some of the tools in order to extend kind of close observation, which is really a euphemism for, you know, surveillance. But like, if you want to do a blue book, you can do that in class. It's a lot harder. It will take a lot more time. If you want to do something similar for online assessment, especially in online programs or cyber schools, at both the high school and at both K-12 and college level, there needs to be additional approaches and solutions to extend that for true learning, because it takes a long time, especially for writing. Writing is a very full of friction, lots of toil that goes into that. Related to agents, I think that this is kind of the question right now, and I think it hit higher education very quickly and abruptly. There were a number of people kind of raising their hand in about a year or 2 years ago saying, hey, there's this wave coming. We're not prepared for it. The students are about to have tools that can access their classes, click around. They will look like students. What are we going to do? We were early to trying to identify those things, call attention to that. Not everybody listens, especially when one of your megaphones might be just like LinkedIn and a couple hundred followers. So what we have found, though, is that it's like, while it is an arms race, I think that there are some misinterpretations of like what an agent can do and what it does look like.
And just to frame this for everyone, I believe I've mentioned in some of the podcasts these agentic web browsers, but this is not the only way that you can do this, but OpenAI and Perplexity both have agentic web browsers that allow you to pop up a browser and then tell it to do something. Go buy tickets, or I guess in this case, go complete my comp sci class, and it will go to the URLs that it needs to, log in, do the things, and click around in the browser as if it's a person. So it's mimicking, you know, as far as the browser and the computer is concerned, it seems like it's a human doing these things. And that's different, because if you're a virtual class and you're marking attendance because someone got there to the Zoom room, well, that's harder to tell, because maybe you just assume that the manual steps were the things that at least verified humanity in a weird way.
Yes. And I would say there are tools used in our K-12 and college education programs called a learning management system, which is kind of how you deliver your class, whether it's even if it's face to face. But it often is where the students are taking their quizzes or uploading the files from like their papers and essays and other things like that. And those systems are set up essentially to kind of track progress through clicks. So they do have log data, and they get kind of some information from the usage by students. And those are set up in a way mostly to just kind of capture and measure traffic. So when an agentic browser like Perplexity or OpenAI Atlas go on those systems, they look a lot like students. But one of the things that we proved a couple months ago is, like, very early we knew that our tools for cursive, even when the first agentic browsers came out, they don't register on our system because they don't, they're not interacting with a keyboard like an actual human or a student will. So we had a kind of clear spot on that gap, able to identify them. Multiple choice was a slightly different situation because you're not using a keyboard mostly. You're just clicking around with a mouse. But by kind of expanding our thinking from kind of text area or Word document to the kind of the screen as a user and as a person might use it, by listening for more behavior and by capturing additional data from the usage of that, you are able to detect these things. So think is like right now, and this is the current state of the art, definitely going to change as people, and especially like cheating tools designed to circumvent some of these things, even as I say them now, I would say we risk somebody building a tool just to do the things that I'm describing. But the fact is that AI does and is not as clumsy as we meatbag students are, right? It's like they don't use a mouse. There's not a lot of interaction. They're very efficient in the way that they're navigating. So if you start to understand kind of the human interaction and what's required as a human to do the learning, that really like the clumsy, rough stuff that we're going through every time we interact with a computer that's very precise, we have different kind of trail of data that we create, this exhaust fumes. If we're listening for that, in a sense, I would say we're in the, I'm not an AI detection tool, we are in the industry or in the category of, we want to do human verification, right? I really care about the who part rather than like the AI.
It's a weird world when you can say out loud that sometimes perfection is a problem, that, you know, writing perfect English with M dashes and the Oxford comma is suddenly like, oh, wait, this is a little too good. Can you give me some misspelling, some lowercase words, some things that makes it feel a little bit like, you know, you're a human on the other end? But it is the imperfections in how you use the use a computer. Now, I think that dovetails into something that I'm, again, going back to Dawn and the podcast episode with her, that one of the things that she mentioned is that there's a span of lessons that schools are starting to release, some that are full AI, some that are mixture of AI, and some that are no AI altogether. And one of the things that immediately caught me about Cursive is that you have a product that allows teachers and schools to kind of figure out that gauge and that guide. And I'm curious, are you finding that there's still a lot of folks saying absolutely no AI in my classroom, or you find that they're kind of moving across the spectrum?
I definitely a spectrum. And I would say I honor any policy that a teacher wants to have in their classroom. I think there's value as long as there's some critical thinking behind why I would not want AI or why I would want the students to have to use AI. I think that there's assessment in a sense is like, I'm not an assessment expert. I think our teachers are well suited to decide and to have full agency over how they administer their assessment. What I want to provide them is clarity and transparency into the kind of the work that students have done. And furthermore, I actually want to provide the student agency in terms of having control over what they're sharing and the transparency that they're bringing back to the classroom so that they can show their teacher, like, look how much time and effort I spent on this document. And as I'm creating this and I look at it the first time, maybe I didn't put enough effort into it, or maybe I have somehow misaligned towards the expectations of my teacher and I used a little bit of AI and now I need to kind of, you know, either go back or I need to disclose that, or it's captured in the system anyways. Is like the student's behavior is something I think that we're working to kind of, you know, steer towards what it is that we want from an outcome verification or to create valid assessment. What is it that you know? What did you learn? And it will be difficult. And I think it's like right now we don't have good systems for it. I would think at the very least a new foundation and an agreement between students and teachers of what is it that our shared transparency, what are we willing to either sacrifice, or what's the new kind of what kind of peace are we able to broker so that you can trust what I have and I can trust what how you're going to assess me, and that's those things are important.
It's interesting because this is that moment that everyone, at least in I think my age range, keeps saying. My teacher said I would never be able to have a calculator everywhere I go, and now I go everywhere with a phone and a computer and a watch and a device that can do it. And in some ways, we're reliving that moment in the conversation around AI and what is the importance of being able to use or write words in a certain way, and is that going to matter? How important is it going to be? And I can't answer those questions, but I do remember a talk that the University of Baltimore did. It was their AI summit last year. And there was a guy, his name is Mike Kintz from the AI Literacy Partners, and he talked about the future of education. And one of his ideas was to stop thinking of the end product and instead require students to turn in their AI prompt history and focus on the critical thought, the way that they use AI. And I found this interesting because that, you know, that does like challenge kids to make sure students, you know, adult students, whatever age they are, to figure out how to use these tools, which is what businesses are asking for. They're asking for AI adept students, but also trying to find that balance of making sure that the understanding and the critical thinking that you would expect in grading an end piece is there. And I'm curious, do you have thoughts or are there things that you're seeing with the schools that you're working on? Or do you find that it's just the Wild West and they're all kind of experimenting and trying to figure out how to make things work in the space?
I do think that there's a lot of experimentation going on now in terms of the tools that we're using, the ways that we're helping students to do the documentation. Even from the student perspective, experimentation in terms of safeguarding against kind of false accusation. I think we're in the Times published a piece where they had talked to students that were like screen recording themselves, like doing their papers and other things like that, which I'll say is like for those students, that's where I have a lot of sympathy, because I think it's really hard these days where we have tools that are set to kind of like help to safeguard the submission process, but at the same time, I'm given tools that are embedded from an AI perspective that are going to trip the wires of those safeguards. So it's like I would use a grammar correction tool that has AI polish, and I use that to correct my writing, and now I have my paper is flagged as AI. So I just think there's a lot of experimentation around the board in terms of like how we navigate this. We have good, red, yellow, green stoplight systems. The AI assessment scale is a great guide that's kind of internationally accepted. Two-lane approach in terms of closely monitored assessment or proctored assessment, or basically that where AI is allowed because it's just formative. So there's a lot of models. I don't think there's a single answer. And I think from an institutional perspective, I think we see a lot of differences from the administrative level to the class level, even to the assignment level, that students are navigating day by day and class by class, where these things are kind of constantly evolving.
And I mean, that's crazy it makes perfect sense that you would record yourself writing your paper, because how else do you prove this? I'm sure that you've heard there are horror stories out there about the false positive issues of students, especially at the college level, that the first thing that happens when they send in their final piece or their paper or whatever they've written is it goes through an AI scanner, and unless it comes back as human written, it's not even reviewed. There was one student who did exactly what you talked about earlier. They showed their Google Drive revision history, and that was their proof in order to get an assignment that was flagged as AI, and this is more on the detection side, of course, which I know it's something that is not necessarily like the full focus of what you do, but I think that's part of the complication. I've been asking myself this with my newsletter. I write a weekly newsletter. I write the words, and then I use AI to help edit it. And then after we edit it, like in the end, it is definitely not, it's like a combination of the things, like the end result, it's a thing that I fine tune and I do, but like there's this weird place where even when it's human, it's not really human. It's this, like a lot of the things that I think we're producing is a combination, right? And that makes this weird space, I imagine.
I think there's a that's an important distinction, and I think so. My perspective is AI detectors do work. So there's a you can run an AI detector and it will tell you whether it's ChatGPT or not. There's some very good ones on the market, and from a content or editorial perspective for the web, so these are great things to have. A nice tool as a consumer where I want to make sure I'm not reading AI slop. In the education space, my answer is much more nuanced, is that I don't know that there is a viable place for AI detection in schools, especially where AI-based tools might be part of student workflows already. And I would say is like if 80+% of students are using AI in some way, I think we're missing some opportunity in terms of assessing really what student work looks like. Because if your example would potentially have you flagged, and without the revision history, how do we actually know what you wrote or not? There's like if it's 80% AI, if it's 100% AI, but if I know that you put 2 hours into writing that paper, we have totally discounted the what I think is most important, which is the effort and like the actual thinking as writing. So our focus is more on authorship, which is, are you the person that was writing it as you were writing it? If I can verify that through, we use typing biometrics, so it's a little bit more sophisticated in terms of like what we're doing. We don't do anything after the fact. We only do it in the process. But if I can focus on that true positive, I can essentially imprint you on the article and allow you to have that as either something you own, something you're able to share, something that you're able to provide a third party to say like, hey, here's proof that, you know, Jason is in this significantly, even though I might have used some AI, even though you're seeing copy paste, but you're actually seeing, you know, true thinking as it's coming from my brain, through my arms, through my hands, directly onto the page. So
I appreciate that. And then LMS, learning management system, which you talked about before, that some of the ways that your product specifically works is to use these systems and also possibly be installed on students' machines to better catch that typing, you know, that I am typing, that there were words written, you know, before going into some other thing. Like to, I would almost say like the verification and audit trail through the process of creating something. Is that a fair way to think of it?
More than fair.
That
would be accurate.
So there was a post on your blog. I think it mentions you from NBC News Report that quoted you. I'm going to read the quote. I think we have to ask students, what level of surveillance are you willing to subject yourself to so that we can understand actually, so that we can actually know that you're learning? And I think that ties directly to the thing, the trust but verify. And you know, maybe there's only a few bad actors, but that doesn't change the fact that they're bad actors, right?
Sure.
And then that becomes this thing of, if we want to verify that you did the work you needed to do to get to the certification, like we need that ability to do it.
Yeah, and I would say that that quote maybe sound a little heavy-handed, but I was like in the context of surveillance,
especially
or
in
like
the context
close,
of what we talked about. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. Just so you know.
Yeah, these days I would say maybe friendlier euphemism, close observation. And I would say right now if you really wanted to know if a student learned something, you might have them come to class, pull out a blue book, and have them get a number two pencil, and actually like do the work with no AI at all around. Right. It was like from that context is like that's really not a real world. That's a real world assessment. But I would say is like there are very few times in the future of your career that you'll be asked to do that from the perspective of your employer. Not everything is for the purpose of employment, but from a learning perspective, there's, you know, how do we ask students is like, would you be willing to use Google Docs as a very simple thing because it creates this paper trail? In that article specifically, we were talking about humanizers, these other things that like do text spinning. So your example of writing your article, if you wanted to minimize that you might get caught, you might put it through this kind of like washing technique that obfuscates that AI was used on a paper, right? It's a way to lower your AI detection score. There's also, sadly, there are now tools also that do auto-typing. So they can actually create artificially the revision history in Google Docs. Those are also detectable, right? So it's like it is an arms race, but it is I would say is that one I'm willing to participate in is like, I do think that there is, it's worth providing students who are honest, easy ways to show and verify that they are learning in ways that minimize their the risk that they might be falsely accused. And I would say is like, that's what I have been focused on for the last probably decade, is ways that we can make it hard for cheaters, but not make it hard for honest people who are doing their work, provide them tools that might be even, that may even help them through the process by making it more efficient, making it more transparent, making it so they lose nothing, making it so that they never forget to cite a specific source that they pasted, making that gamified in some way that might give them pleasure or reward system or effort by showing like, hey, you did the real hard work here and you should be really proud of that. And if that can help in the future where it might, you know, signal to a prospective employer, like this person should be on top of the pile because they have authenticity, they are showing it, they're willing to kind of bring more to the table than just a flat document that's, or just an AI slop, ChatGPT copy paste cover letter. Mm-hmm. I'm all for it, right? It's like human ingenuity is something to be revered and to be, to put on that pedestal and to kind of to want and to stoke and to help to be created.
So I have a closing question. If a student is listening right now or a parent, are there, and they're trying to figure out where AI fits into their education without blowing up their integrity. I get this question from students who are like, should I use these tools? Should I not use these tools? You know, what is the thing that you would tell them that they should start to think about in this moment?
First, listen to your teachers.
Of course.
Right? Read the assignment requirements and make sure that you have a clear sense of what's allowed and what's permitted. And then beyond that, I would say is like, this is a great opportunity, in school is a great opportunity to start exploring the ways that you can, to figure out how you learn and how you learn best, and to maybe also take a close consideration of how do you know the difference between learning and taking a shortcut? I think that's like the learning should feel a little uncomfortable. I don't think we're very societally wide. I don't think we're good with discomfort, but learning's hard. It's hard to be an adult these days with all this AI out there too, trying to take our jobs. It's hard to be a student where, you know, you are trying to navigate significant ambiguity and an allure of instant, fast answers and like high quality answers. I understand the tensions there, but there's a lot of opportunity and there's a lot of self-learning and learning with your teachers and in schools and doing the writing. And don't be afraid. Writing is hard. Writing is something that it takes a lot of effort, but it is one of the best ways to interact with AI these days. So I'm long on writing.
I think that's excellent advice. Joe, this has been awesome. Thank you for joining. You can find more about Cursive at cursivetechnology.com, and the link will be in the show notes.
Thank you so much, Jason. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Joseph Thiebaud is the founder and CEO of Cursive Technology. All right, folks, that's Thoughts on Tech and Things for the week. Let me know your thoughts by leaving me a message in the WYPR app, calling 410-735-1616, or find me at jasonmperry.com. Thanks to the team at WYPR, our producers, Sam Burmes-Dawes and Shania Mapson, and Perry Labs, Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. New episodes drop every other week. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I'll see you next time.